calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone here in Little Beirut, People's Republic of Portland, Oregon, Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Dwight Eisenhower. We heard a lot from him yesterday, didn't we? Freedom has its life in the hearts, the actions, the spirits of men, and so it must be daily earned and refreshed, else like a flower cut from its life-giving roots, it will wither and die. Well said. Coming up on the program today, Larry Scott, a VA watchdog, is going to be talking with us about Agent Orange and other herbicides, not in Vietnam, but in Florida, Georgia, Arkansas, Hawaii, Texas, New York, Washington, California, and more. And and Greg Palast is going to be with us. Greg has an amazing story. I'll just leave it at that. We'll get into it as time goes on. Right now we have with us Peter Sutterman. Peter is the technology analyst for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, the website. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Peter, you've been writing about, and CEI is getting active in this whole issue of net neutrality. Why would you want to have a group of for-profit corporations, many of whom have overt political agendas as well as profit agendas, running and controlling the Internet when right now we have a system that seems to work quite well with net neutrality?
Well, currently we don't actually have a net neutrality regime in the way that net neutrality supporters are trying to get it put in place. The current system is that the telecom companies actually do control the Internet for the most part. It is their private property, which for the most part they invested in, built up, and are now controlling. And net neutrality, I don't have a problem with net neutrality as a concept. I have a problem with it as mandate, as a business model. And so it's not that net neutrality in and of itself is always particularly problematic.
But the Internet was brought into being.
Mandating it from the federal government level.
Right, but the Internet was brought into being by federal legislation. You've got the main backbone out of Stanford University. Most of this was publicly funded and publicly supported, number one. And number two, if you look at what happens when private telecom companies get into this kind of thing. I mean, look at SMS. Are you familiar with SMS?
SMS?
Yeah, short message service. It's text messages.
Okay. I'm somewhat familiar with it.
Text messaging is the cell phone equivalent of the Internet. I mean, it's essentially an identical thing. You got this nationwide network, the U.S. cellular phone network. You can SMS from anyone to anyone. Well, why is there no Craigslist or Amazon or Flickr or eBay on SMS? Well, because there's no net neutrality with SMS. So if you want to get into a short message service, you know, a text message, if you want to be able to use it in any kind of commercial way, instead of just, you know, renting a web server and paying $15 a month like you do now if you wanted to do a website, instead, first you have to hire a company known as an aggregator. They charge anywhere from $1,000 to $10,000 a month. And why? Because they've got to deal with 15 or 20 different companies, all of whom have different rules and regulations. Some of them are absolutely incredible. They lock out, for example, particular types of content. They won't allow ringtones to be transferred from person to person because they want to be able to sell them, so they don't want people to be able to share them with each other. Some of them have decency restrictions. For example, the word fornicate is illegal to use on Verizon's system. You can't use that. You have to make your application to the carrier for SMS service, and in some cases wait months for them to approve it. And if they reject it, you have no recourse. They can simply reject it. The lack of net neutrality has done on the cell phone system, the SMS cell phone system in the United States, is make it far more profitable for these companies and destroy any vestige of essentially, you know, the free discussion. And it just baffles me, other than, you know, the obvious profit motive, which I know, you know, CEI is all about, other than the profit motive, why anybody would want to do that to the Internet.
Well, I think in the case of SMS, again, I'm not nearly as familiar with the law in that matter, but in the case of SMS, I would imagine that it's as much a product of the medium as of any sort of legislation or lack thereof. But with net neutrality, I think the important thing to remember is that profit motive, other things like that, what you would be doing if you mandate net neutrality as the business model is coming in to and
we already have.
Telling, well, but
it is the law right now.
Actually, it's not the net neutrality is a principle enshrined by FCC, but there's no enforcement of it. So it's not the law, as in they have to have net neutrality.
Right, but it is, and it is what has built the internet.
But I would say that the future of the internet, we're very attached, understandably so. We're right now, we're very attached to the internet as it currently exists. And everybody loves the internet. It's invaded our homes and our offices. And so we, like most people, we are suspicious of change. And I think that's entirely understandable. But I think what we're missing here is that if we sort of freeze the net in place through regulation, then we're not going to get the development, for the future. We're not going to see the rollout of other applications. It's just a matter of allowing ISPs to offer priority service for applications that we all want, like HD television on demand over broadband lines. There have been issues people brought up with the way that Xbox Live service or other services like that, mostly these major media, multimedia services over broadband, are going to be significantly impaired in a mandated net neutrality regime. Because the companies are not going to have the incentive to go in there and build the new infrastructure.
Sure, they have that incentive right now.
It's
not that they're allowed to charge more for it. They charge based on bandwidth. They charge based on usage. I mean, they're doing that already. If you're feeding a massive amounts of video into your, you know, you pay more for it.
Absolutely, that's correct. But I think that
so they already have the incentive.
They are charging based on the amount of bandwidth that you have opened up to you. But this is a
and the amount that you use and the
about
speed.
About what net neutrality is. Net neutrality is not the ISPs charging you for more bandwidth. Right now, you can get a 2 meg line or a 6 meg line or a 20 meg line, and if you the wider the pipe, the more you pay. But what net neutrality is about is about taking what is essentially a dumb internet, an internet in which all of the bits and bytes on it, on those pipes, are treated absolutely equally.
I would not call it dumb. I would call it egalitarian.
Egalitarian. But either way, for the most part, treat all bits and bytes on the internet equally. And what that means is that applications that would require prioritized service, such as HD television, would be very difficult, if not impossible, to institute.
They're not going to require prioritized service. They just require more bandwidth. And if they're pumping it out and they're paying the companies that are providing it, those companies will build more infrastructure. That's what's happening right now.
Well, but think about it this way. Think about it in terms of local roads or think about it in terms of HOV lanes on your way into the city in the morning. Now, not everybody on the internet is going to need an HOV lane. Most people are fairly happy with the way that
we don't charge for HOV lanes. HOV lanes are a way of.
But if something needs to be put to put up front.
No, if you're going to use if you're going to use a traffic metaphor, the traffic metaphor is that when communities discover that their roads are clogged up, they either build more roads or they build mass transit systems. I mean, you expand the capacity to it. You don't say, okay, this car can go faster and this car can go slower, unless you're trying to produce a specific result. In the case of HOV lanes, you're trying to produce the specific result of ride sharing. In what you're talking about, you're trying to produce the specific result of the websites that pay the most get the fastest delivery, and that just doesn't seem right.
Well, I think in what you when you, there's a little bit of confusion there, because on one hand, you're talking about when the roads get clogged up, they can, you know, build more roads or build a mass transit system. Certainly, that's sort of how things work.
And there's nothing, by the way, preventing these companies from building their own separate internets.
But what I'm talking about is when you want to have a business model that requires not just the roads, you know, building more, but just being allowing a few things to get through very quickly, where other things don't necessarily need to, but allowing those few things for a specific service to get through at a much faster rate than the others,
I'm not buying it, Peter. I'm not buying it. But you make a good shot. I mean, a good argument. Peter Sutterman, he is the technology analyst for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. If you want to read more about it and his take on it, go over to CEI.org. Thanks for being with us, Peter.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program, the No Boring Zone. Welcome back to our show. Ned Lamont beat Joe Lieberman yesterday. It's all the buzz right now. What's happening as we go forward? Joe Lieberman today registering as an independent, and conventional wisdom has it that there's a very good chance that he could win. He'll pull in a lot of Republican votes and a lot of quote, middle of the road, end quote, votes, and that in the general election he might actually beat Ned Lamont. That's going to be an interesting one to watch. But my message to Joe Lieberman is, hey, you lost the election. See you later. I mean, you know, he was fine when he was running for vice president and he lost the election, or he thought he lost the election. And he said, well, it's fine, I'll just stay in the Senate. Come on, take a tip from Billy Towson. Go be a lobbyist or something, or you know, Tom DeLay. I mean, there's a million things you can do to make a living, Joe. Your day in the political sun is over. I think it's just tragic that a Democrat is going to say no, I'm going to run against a Democrat as something other than a Democrat. It's just I just think it's tragic. I think it's wrong. But it's happening. So we'll see how this all shakes out as time goes on. Right? 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. If you have thoughts on the issues of the day, this net neutrality thing that we were just talking about with Peter from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'm telling you, there is a full court press going on by the corporate interests, particularly the big telephone companies. To make the internet just like the SMS services with cell phones, so that they can regulate your content, so that they can regulate your speed, so that they, you know, so they can make more money on it. And it could mean the cable TV-ization, essentially, of the internet, where you end up with a small number of very large channels who are able to pay the bill. And get the fast transmission, and everybody else is slow. And so, you know, my website, your website, you know, our little blog or the website for the Tom Hartman program, TomHartman.com, something like that. If I don't pay them the big fees, it's just going to load nice and slow, and a lot of people give up and go away. And the big companies that pay, but the Disney site, man, bang, that's going to load really fast. And I think it's wrong. I remember this conversation back when I was working with CompuServe back in the 80s. I was running forums on CompuServe back when that was the internet, more or less. And right after AOL bought CompuServe from H&R Block, in fact, there was a meeting that I was in where there were discussion about, you know, these switches have the ability to know the origin point. What if we were to program these switches so that we could say to certain advertisers, hey, you know, if you pay us a fee, we'll make sure that your data gets through faster, and if you don't pay the fee, we'll slow things down. And to their credit, the folks at AOL decided not to do that. Now, again, this was 15 years ago. Decided not to do it. Said, you know, and I think in large part because they felt there'd be so much blowback from consumers. But it was a great new revenue opportunity, and that's really the bottom line, is these folks are looking for more ways to squeeze more money out of us. And I really think that the Internet has become the public library of our day. It has become part of the commons of information. And it was created in large part by government. Al Gore, in fact, yes, indeed, did sign and sponsor the legislation that brought it into being. Came out of Stanford University in large part. I mean, the big backbone is still there for it. And it's just, you know, net neutrality, pretty straightforward thing. So we got a couple of topics here to talk about. Isaac in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Isaac, what's on your mind?
Hi, this is Isaac. Net neutrality is critical for the Internet to continue in the direction that it's been going and to continue to provide an equal voice for people that want to publish content, regardless of its nature. If you implement switch regulations that allow people to prioritize traffic based on a pay-for basis, you'll end up with small websites not being able to compete with the CNNs and Time Warners.
Sure, and not only that, if you look at what they've done with SMS on the National Cellular Network, which is, I think, a very good analogy, they're saying, you know, if you use certain words, you can't be on their system. If you have particular political points, that you have to be approved by them before you can get on. This just is wrong. It's just wrong.
Yeah, the absence of net neutrality would basically bring a content filter that we haven't seen to this point across the entire Internet, and it would be by, you know, based on revenue prospects of the individual providers, whether it was a you know, your home ISP or the ISP that they're buying their aggregate.
Yeah, and not just the revenue. I mean, that's what they're all talking about. But, I mean, we've seen this movie before. We've seen it in cable TV, and we've seen it in SMS. It's also going to have something to do with their agendas, their content agendas. I mean, it's like, you know, NBC or General Electric, big defense contractor, canceling the most profitable show on MSNBC, Phil Donahue, because he was anti-war. You know, anti-war is bad for business for GE. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman. We keep on waiting, waiting on the world to change. It's hard to beat the system when we're standing at a distance. So we keep on waiting, waiting on the world to change.
And welcome back to the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program. Was it yesterday or the day before I played a listener comment who was calling me a beep, beep? Day before yesterday, David says, well, here's one. By the way, our comment line, if you'd like to call in, and you don't want to, like, just go on the air, but you'd like to leave something to be said on the air, our comment line, you can give us a shout or dial it up, 503-323-6620, and give us your take in 30 seconds or less. And remember, your thoughts and opinions may just make it on the air, so make it count, 503-323-6620. Here's a follow-up comment to the person who called me a bleeping bleep head.
Tom, I just called to tell you that intelligent people love you, and I just heard you play a negative comment on the air, and that woman just sounded like a big fat pig who sits at home and enjoys all the spoils and doesn't understand that America was founded by activists just like you. And I just heard Hugh Hewitt say, we can't let the Democrats win or we're going to lose the war in January. I mean, like there's a war to be won. My God. So keep up the good work and please keep educating, and I will continue to buy from all the sponsors that are on your show. Thank you.
Oh, there you go. And thank you very much. And this is listener supported radio. You know, this is absolutely listener supported radio. The way that you support this program is by patronizing our sponsors locally and nationally and letting them know that you're patronizing them because you heard about them on this program. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, go to TomHartmann.com and just click the live chat link. It'll get you in there. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Good day to you, Tom. Well, we're through with the elections for a while, and I wanted to comment. I heard you briefly comment on the Lieberman-Lamont race.
Yeah.
And as someone who, like you and a lot of your listeners, I think the war in Iraq was deplorable and still is, and I believe Mr. Lamont was primarily the victor in that race because of that. But Mr. Lieberman, you know, this guy seems to be a nice guy, and he probably is. But like you said, back in 2000 when he kind of covered his bets by running for the Senate at the same time as he ran for the vice presidency, and he seemed to be quicker than Mr. Gore to concede that election, even though most of us know, well, we know for a fact that he and Mr. Gore won the popular vote. They were screwed out of the Florida electoral votes by Jeb Bush, Catherine Harris, and that crowd, but that didn't seem to bother him too much. Now, when he loses by quite a substantial margin, you know, 4%, I mean, it's, what was it, 10,000 votes he lost by?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure, but it's 4%. But keep in mind, by the way, in the 2000 election, he was also running for the Senate. I mean, he was hedging his bets, which is, in my mind, bad form.
And, of course, then in that debate with Dick Cheney, if you can call it that.
That wasn't a debate. That was a love fest.
I know. And like a friend of mine said, how do you lose a debate to Dick Cheney, Mr. Charisma? You know, I almost wonder, Tom, and I don't want to get conspiratorial here, whether this guy's a closet Republican. And the reason he's running as an independent, although I guess this Schlesinger guy is so weak, there's no way he's going to win, even if Lieberman does run as an independent. But you really wonder about this guy. Bill Bennett says nice things about him, you know. And is this guy really a Democrat, do you think?
Well, yeah, he's really a Democrat. That's one of the extraordinary things about the Democratic Party is that there really and truly is room for a whole wide range of opinions and views. Yeah, the idea that a political party should absolutely move in lockstep and everybody should say the same thing all the time and it should be totally hierarchical and from the top down and there should only be one theology that's espoused, one political theology, one, you know, philosophy, is consistent with the conservative worldview.
Yes.
The conservative, you know, a hierarchical, patriarchal,
right.
a dominator worldview, and that's consistent with the Republican Party. I think the Democratic Party saying, you know, yeah, we'll even have, you know, a crazy guy like Zell Miller in here. frankly, it's okay with me. But when the crazy guys, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, I'm not calling Joe Lieberman crazy, but let's say the DLC Dems, the less than progressive Democrats lose elections, I think that they should say, well, you know, I gave it a good shot, thank you very much, and now I'm off to do something else. I'm sure that there's no shortage of corporations that would love to have Joe Lieberman on their board of directors. There's just all kinds of opportunities for him in the private sector. He's got a lot of favors he can call in. He doesn't have to go messing around in politics any longer. He's lost the race. Joe, you lost the race.
But it seems like the conservatives out there, and I listened to one of your competitors who remain nameless, and the spin is going to be now, oh, look how nasty these Democrats are. They're turning on a decent man like Joe Lieberman only because of the war, which was his heart. You know how it's going to be.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, it rolls right off my back because I know that 60% of Americans right now in the latest poll agree with Ned Lamont that it's time to get out of Iraq, and number one. And number two, and perhaps most important, if you heard my interview with Ned Lamont here on the program on Monday this week, he's not a one-issue guy.
No.
Ned Lamont is a good progressive who he understands business, he understands politics, he cares about politics, he's been involved in politics for a number of years, he's been an activist locally in Connecticut, he's a good guy, he'll make a good senator, and you know, I wish him well, and it's time for Joe Lieberman to say, you know, my day in the sun was over and it's time to move on.
Mr. Lamont is a successful businessman, correct?
He is, yes.
And you would think the Republicans would go for that. They're supposed to be all about being pro-business, you know, and here Lieberman, I don't think Lieberman's ever done anything in the private sector, has he? You'd think the Republicans would praise a guy like Lamont, a self-made man, you know?
Yeah, well, I can't, you know, I don't know about what Joe Lieberman did 18 years ago before he came into the Senate, but I know, you know, the last three terms he's been in the Senate, And enough is enough. Rick, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Bob in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I agree with you. I think he should move on, but he's not going to, and that's what's troubling, because not just for a Senate seat, but there's a number of House seats in Connecticut, like that Chris Shays. I know he's petrified, you know, because of with this upcoming election. But now Joe Lieberman is going to take votes from those Democrats who are running for those House seats. And that's a problem, don't you think?
How so? What am I missing here, Bob?
Well, aren't people like Chris Shays is probably going to end up now endorsing Joe Lieberman?
You think
absolutely. I mean, people who go in and they're going to yank straight ticket, now they're going to think there's still Lieberman supporters out there. They're going to take votes away from Lamont, who are going to take votes away from those people who are running for House of Rep seats.
I see.
And Chris Shays might get those votes where maybe he wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, by staying in the race.
Sure.
And we're really here talking at the local level of Connecticut politics, not national politics.
Right.
By staying in the race, what Joe is doing, Joe Lieberman is doing, is he's just basically scrambling the whole Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I heard what you said earlier about Phil Donahue with MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny, last week Amy Goodman was on Hardball, and Chris Matthews totally said that's not true.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was getting angry with her.
I don't know how he can say that. The memo is a matter of public record.
Right, because he said, well, they would have gotten rid of me because I've been against the war, too.
Yeah, right.
So if that thing re-airs, check it out.
Amazing. Okay, thanks a lot, Bob. Good to hear from you. Margaret in Everett, Washington. Hey, Margaret, what's on your mind today?
Oh, well, I've been campaigning through this whole thing for Lamont because I can't stand that Lieberman any more than can George Bush. And through this whole 6 years, he's proven that he is a George Bush fan and that he is a total Republican because everything he's voted for has been to wait until he knows that they're going to win the vote before he decides to change to Democrat vote.
Yeah.
This is proven through the whole thing. He's a Republican. I'm glad he got voted out, and I hope people in.
I would not say he's a Republican, Margaret. I'd say he's a conservative.
Well, and he swings to the Republican vote.
Yeah, and he's appealing to some Republicans, and that's that's life.
Yep.
Margaret, thank you for your activism and for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. David just handed me this story from CNN.com. Democratic leadership quickly backs Lamont. Senator Lieberman says he cannot accept lost vows to fight on. That's the headline. CNN Dateline. Democratic leaders Wednesday moved quickly to back Ned Lamont, the winner of the Connecticut primary. The move puts veteran Senator Joe Lieberman, who has vowed to run as an independent, at odds with his own party. And let's see here. Democratic senators who voiced support for Lamont include Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, Senator Hillary Clinton of New York, and Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana. Evan Bayh, of course, big in the DLC, and Hillary Clinton as well. So that means that he's now Ned Lamont, a relatively progressive candidate, is getting support even from the DLC. Connecticut's senior senator, Chris Dodd, also is scheduled to appear with Lamont Wednesday. Dodd had campaigned for Lieberman before Tuesday's primary. So it looks to me like the party is saying, you know, we're staying with the Democratic Party. And, Joe Lieberman lost the race, and so, you know, Joe can take a hike. I mean, there's a lot of other things Joe Lieberman can do with his life. Maybe he should run as a Republican, I don't know. But and Lieberman says it's ridiculous to say he supported Bush and continues to criticize Lamont on Wednesday. He's continuing to criticize Lamont, the guy who is now the Democratic nominee for the Senate from Connecticut, the former senator from Connecticut, soon to be former senator from Connecticut, Joe Lieberman, is continuing to criticize the guy who is the nominee of his party. This is called being a bad loser. I mean, it's just really simple. This isn't rocket science. This is a bad loser. 45 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting, for a change.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
My country, it is of thee. But that is what you'll be if you stand in the way of Cheney's war machine. Osama bin Laden, man, where you been? We couldn't find you, so we just went the other way. Go figure. Now we're doing the Bush and Cheney shuffle. A twist on this and a spin on that. I don't believe a single word they say. They just sit around and make up lies all day. They told us Saddam had bubonic plague. WMDs in a bombing place. It's all underground and pointing at the USA.
Yes, and in fact, it twarn't. Welcome back, 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. One person at a time, one congressional district at a time, one election at a time, one day at a time. Speaking of one day at a time, today, 894 days, 12 hours, 7 minutes, 57 seconds. Until George W. Bush voluntarily leaves office, assuming that the Democrats do not get elected to take control of both the House and the Senate, and therefore Bush does not get impeached, which I'm not sure is a safe assumption. Over in the chat room, everybody's talking about the Willamette Week, the local alternative weekly newspaper. Today's their best of series, and I'm the best talk show host in Portland, according to them, and it says liberal heartthrob Hartman. David, quit laughing. Louise says, you were always my liberal heartthrob. That's sweet. Thank you, Louise. Anyhow, back to Joe Lieberman. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Tom in Pinckney, Michigan. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how's it going today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Oh, well, everybody's talking about Lieberman and Lamont, but you're from Michigan. You know about Joe Schwartz, relatively moderate Republican. Well, he was moved out of our lost primary to Tim Walberg, who's a very right-wing Republican state senator.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the right-wing moving even further right, even in a blue state.
Yeah.
And you've got the left-wing lamenting the move to the left. Tell you what, we really need to polarize to the left. Progressive politics is the way to go.
Well, and it's not even the left. That's the thing, Tom. I mean, the ideas like let's not have foreign wars, particularly for oil. Let's have renewable energy sources and an actual national energy policy. Let's have trade policies that keep our jobs at home. Let's have a minimum wage, a living wage. Let's have a national health care program. These are the programs that the mainstream media characterizes as the extreme left. And every single one of these programs is supported by between 70% and 90% of Americans. That's not the left. That's the middle.
That's absolute. You know, and also one of the things, the way the corporations have the rights of a person needs to go away.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous that they're immune from so much.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right, Tom, and I so agree with you that I wrote an entire book about it. It's called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and I appreciate your calling and giving me a chance to plug my own book. Yes. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Michelle in Long Beach, California. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I've got a civics question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If Lieberman is now an independent, and my question is, does he hold any Democratic committee seats?
He does, and as long as he's caucusing with the Democrats, then he can, like, for example, Bernie Sanders, he's an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, so you know, he gets on committees and things like that. But the larger question here is, for example, I made the comment before the last break that, you know, Joe Lieberman, you know, should, he's a Democrat, he should go along with the will of the party. He should behave
right,
like a good Democrat and say, hey, I lost the election, I'm out of here.
Right.
And Sue over in the chat room said he's not a Democrat anymore. He just registers as an independent. Well, if he's not a Democrat anymore, if he's really going to leave the party right now, he needs to leave the party right now. And if he's going to leave the party right now, frankly, I think he should resign his Senate seat.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, if he's going to take his marbles and go home, he should go someplace else. But that's, you know, just my opinion. So.
Well, yeah, I guess we all have them, right?
Yeah, there you go. I got to move along. Michelle, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi, quick question. A female caller earlier said Lieberman's a Republican, and you corrected her by saying, no, I'd say he's a conservative. So I got a question for you.
Sure.
What's the difference between a conservative Democrat and a liberal Republican? Does the party label connote fiscal economic positions?
No.
What?
No. The party is just the club that they're a member of. The conservative worldview is a worldview that fundamentally assumes people are evil and need to be controlled by external forces, that supports hierarchy as a consequence of that, that believes that there should be a small ruling elite, and that doesn't trust democracy.
But
liberals, on the other hand, trust democracy, believe in the will of the people, and think that a ruling elite is a counterproductive or destructive thing.
So
you will find liberals in the Republican Party, and you will find conservatives in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, but Sue, when you say what's the difference between a conservative Democrat and a liberal Republican, to me, the Republican part of that label means how you stand on fiscal economic issues like Schwarzenegger, but then on the liberal side,
no, it doesn't.
Culturally,
it just means the club you're a member of. Yeah, now, the clubs have been largely taken over by people who have these philosophies. But basically, these are just the clubs you're members of. And that's why I think it's so important that not only do folks like you and I, Tom, take back the Democratic Party, but that people like, you know, like my parents who, or my dad's not alive anymore, but my mother, you know, Republicans of good ethics and morals and whatnot should be taking back the Republican Party.
Right.
Because as we talked about yesterday, Dwight Eisenhower's rolling in his grave.
I mean, how can Lieberman still be a Democrat, but you say he's a conservative? I'm confused.
Well, that's my point. There have always been conservative Democrats. There have always been liberal Republicans. The liberal and conservative part is the worldview part. The conservative, Republican or Democrat is the club they're members of. And I think that we need to make those differentiations. And, you know, that's that. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with Greg Palast.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. Greg Palast is with us, gregpalast.com, PALAST.com. His website, his most recent book, Armed Madhouse. If you don't own it, go out and buy it now. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Glad to be with you.
What is this smart pig?
I'm sorry?
The British Petroleum's smart pig?
Oh, the smart pig. Well, there's two smart pigs. There's the one that they put through the pipeline. See, British Petroleum just shut down all our oil coming, or about 80% of our oil coming out of Alaska. So there's about 8% of the oil that we use. Needless to say, the prices of oil are going through the roof. Up to $77 a barrel. And in California, the price of gasoline, of course, is just exploding to the great benefit of a company called ARCO, the number one retailer in California, which is 100% owned by
British Petroleum.
Smart pigs, hey? Well, anyway, that's one smart pig. Is
okay.
Lord Brown is the CEO of British Petroleum. And I'm not saying he's a smart pig, but he's judiciously used one. A smart pig in oil pipeline parlance is the drone, an electronic drone that you stick into the pipe to see the pipe's condition, if it's corroding away and it's about to bust.
Right.
Well,
it's sort of the pipeline version of a colonoscopy.
Let's not think about that.
Yeah,
for us over 50,
there you go.
Just not going to think about this.
All righty.
Yes. So you're right. Now, but they haven't made the pipeline grab its ankles in 14 years. It's supposed to, that pig is supposed to be, sorry, it's all picking up on your idea. The pig is supposed to be run through the pipeline sty there, continuously, but they haven't done it for 14 years. They finally put the pig through, and believe it or not, they found that the pipe is corroded and ready to spring leaks all over the place.
Right, it's down to like 80% of it is gone in some places.
Yeah, so you know what? No, that's optimistic, let me tell you. But guess what? They have known this for a decade. I was actually led the racketeering investigation of the pipeline's operation many years ago when I was an investigator before I was an investigative reporter. That's one of the things I did. And what I found is that people then were screaming, I mean a decade ago, about corrosion up and down that pipeline. And what's happened now, so they knew that they had to replace pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, on March 2nd of this year, they sprang a leak up there. They
right.
sprang
huge
a leak.
Oil spill.
They had an oil spill up there. It hardly got any notice. It was because of the corrosion. So, duh, of course there's going to be that they have to start replacing the pipes. But you know what? British Petroleum and made a decision. We're not going to, you know, a few years ago when they really needed to replace the pipes, not to do it because no one, the oil market was flooded and no one would have cared. And they, and even if they did it in March, it was still in the springtime. What they did was, is waited till the absolute height of the driving season, especially in California where they've got the ARCO subsidiary, so that when they shut the pipe, and by the way, they made a decision to shut all the pipe for no reason, that's completely outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't replace every piece of pipe at once anyway.
So they could have been doing this in 5 mile sections.
They're doing it all to, you know, at the absolute perfect timing so that the price of oil cranks up. At no other time of the year and in no other year would you have had a $2.50 jump in the price of a barrel of oil. BP just earned a $10 million a day windfall by shutting down the pipe because of the other oil itself. Basically, over 96% of its sales are not from Alaska. Okay.
Right.
And so all the rest of its oil is going up. And not only BP,
the whole rest of the bunch of them.
And by the way, in case you're wondering whether the rest of the oil industry was in on this decision, they actually had a meeting on it. BP is not allowed. They're only 46% owner, and they're the chief manager. But they get together with ExxonMobil.
You mean Lee Raymond.
Yeah,
the guy who plays Mike Myers character in the movies.
I'm going to eat you.
Yeah.
I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, you know, I'm sympathetic to Lee Raymond because he only got a $400 million bonus last year. And the problem with only, he didn't even give him $500 million. And considering that Exxon is earning $1 billion a week off the current crises in the Mideast, I thought he was robbed.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Lee Raymond, Lord Brown of BP, Royal Dutch Shell, and a couple of the smaller biters, you know, Condi's old firm, Chevron.
Yeah.
They all have a piece of the action. They all meet together and make a decision about when they're going to close the pipe. And golly gee, what did they decide on the absolute week when it could not be worse for the world oil market and for California? Golly gee. Now, this is a problem that is 10 years old, and suddenly they have to shut it down in July 2006. As soon as the bombs started going off in Lebanon and in Baghdad, don't we have to shut down that pipe?
Isn't the meeting together of theoretically competitive companies, particularly very, very large ones, a violation of the law, Greg Palast?
Ah, but they have an exception here, because under the Alaskan pipeline deal, they are a consortium that is allowed to meet to discuss operational issues. And they all got together and decided, golly gee, when should we shut down the pipe? And they've been meeting, by the way, they've been discussing this pipeline shutdown for corrosion for years. And finally they said, right now.
Now, this all sounds like, you know,
Yes, it does.
more than coincidence. Is there any evidence of any kind of criminal wrongdoing here.
You know what? Let's put it this way. When I was doing the official investigation, the Exxon Valdez breakup, I said that not only should the criminal charges be brought against Exxon, but that criminal charges should have been brought against British Petroleum. This is a company which has been operating the pipeline in a manner to manipulate the oil markets and in a way that has been brutally unsafe. I'm telling you, you have to remember that this is something like their 12th warning about corrosion. I mean, you have to understand that their decision now, they knew that they were going to have to replace those pipes at some time, but the idea to shut it all down and shut it down in July in the middle of several wars going on.
Is the alternative, Greg, for them to take, like, you know, 1 mile stretches and reroute around it while they rebuild it or something? That's certainly, you know, like they do with highways.
Yeah, what do you think, that the pipe has no valves on it? It's true, they're corroded valves, so we're a little bit afraid of shutting of toying with them, but nevertheless.
Yeah.
That the pipes do have valves. There is even the pinheads at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue are talking with the company about segmented shutdown. You know? I mean, because even when the White House is worried that these guys are getting too greedy and sloppy.
Then you know something's really going on. We're talking with Greg Palast. GregPalast.com, his website, his newest book, Armed Madhouse. And he's the author of this new piece, British Petroleum's Smart Pig, The Brilliantly Profitable Timing of the Alaska Oil Pipeline Shutdown, published in the United Kingdom paper, The Guardian, and on Tuesday. Do you expect, Greg, I mean, these companies not only control the oil supply coming out of Alaska, they control an awful lot of the oil coming out of the Middle East. Do you expect to see more of this kind of thing? I mean, is $100 barrel oil far away?
Enron was the master. Ken Lay was the master on strategic shutdowns.
Yeah.
You know, we got to repair something. Just at the height of you know, like when the massive electricity use was peaking, suddenly he had a call for a shutdown of a power plant.
Right, yeah. So let's get Grandma Millie. Yeah,
right,
yeah,
yeah,
all
exactly.
Those great
so,
clips, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the type of game that these guys have been playing for a very long time. And one thing, like, you know, in our manuals they talk about how we went into Iraq. A lot of people think we went in, you know, to get the oil, you know, oil for blood, which, you know, of course, a lot of Americans think is a bargain, but nevertheless.
Blood for oil, yeah.
In fact, what I was finding from the internal documents where you have Exxon and these other guys is that their big concern is shutting off the source of oil. They were really panicked that Saddam could have flooded the oil market. Iraq has a tremendous amount of oil. They weren't there to get it. They were very, very concerned in this.
There to restrain it.
Yeah, to restrain the oil, to cut off. You know, we don't use the 82nd Airborne as Exxon's exploration company to find oil and bring it back, but to find oil and shut off the spigots.
Yeah, regulate the market. That's the bottom line there from the point of view of the companies themselves. Greg Palast, his website, gregpalast.com, his newest book, Armed Madhouse. And a brilliant new article. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
You're the best, Tom. Thanks.
Always great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. The pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I won't.
That's what we have to do, my friends. Absolutely. Stand our ground and say, okay, 894 days, 11 hours, 37 minutes, 52 seconds till George Bush voluntarily leaves office, but we can accelerate that with a little bit of an impeachment hearing. Sign on to House Resolution 635 along with John Conyers. Tell your member of Congress to do so. And let's have an investigation of the high crimes and misdemeanors of the Bush administration, one of which is lying us into a war where this very day, as we speak, American soldiers are being pinned down and shot at, and people are dying in a far-off land just so Bush and his Republican cronies could take back the Senate in 2002. and so Bush could get himself reelected or elected for the first time. And even that turns out it was phony in 2004. This ongoing crime, I mean, death, people dying right now as we speak as a consequence of the policies of this administration, and one person, one grieving mother willing to stand up and say that she's going to commit her life to try to stop that particular insanity. And Cindy Sheehan down there in Crawford. Victoria Jones is with us, our senior Crawford correspondent with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you, in the hotter-than-hell glaring heat down here.
Yeah, what's the temperature?
It's hard to tell, but I'm sure it's going to reach just about 100 today. It's got to. It feels like it.
Yeah, and the sun is out.
The sun is out. It's blue as blue. It's not very humid, so, but it's certainly the heat index is going to be way up there, 110.
Yeah.
And if Cindy is, in fact, protesting with the other Code Pink people right at the checkpoint where the president's ranch begins, they're going to be feeling the heat, particularly since she's fasting. I mean, it's
called having the courage of your convictions.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So what's happening there in Crawford right now?
Well, nothing much happens in Crawford. Not quite. The press secretary will be with us in about an hour or so, so we'll get more of a sense of what's going on with regard to the institution, that kind of thing. But I mean, Cindy Sheehan really seems to be, even though things are quiet and not much is going on and there are not many protesters, only about 10, she really is the focus of a lot of activity, even when there isn't much activity. When I drove yesterday to the president's ranch, which is about 7 miles from where the press center is located, you get to a checkpoint, which is as far as you can go, and beyond that is the ranch. Now, what you cannot tell is exactly where the ranch is because you can't see it. You can't see anything except Secret Service guys and troopers. And what I wanted to do when I saw that this is exactly where Code Pink was protesting, they found a little area where they could protest, I wanted to stop and talk to Cindy and talk to some of the others. I was told I couldn't park because I'd be impeding the entrance and exit from the ranch. So I had to turn around and leave. But I'm going to try this again today because it seemed to me that there must be a way of talking to Cindy Sheehan. There must be a way of talking to protesters that does not, surely to goodness, impede the entrance and exit of people to this ranch.
Yeah.
You would think.
Well, how did Cindy and Medea Benjamin and the other folks who were there, how did they get there?
I think they must be dropped off.
Dropped off, I see.
Probably by a van, yeah, and then picked up again later. One man had a violin. There was some people sitting on chairs. They were standing up, sitting around. Some of them had their backs to me, so I couldn't actually see Cindy if she was in fact there. My understanding is she was there because when I went to Camp Casey earlier, as I said to you yesterday on the show, she wasn't there. None of them were there. I understand also that they are a little frustrated this year because, they got so much publicity last year because it was such a new story. They really are not getting very much press coverage this year, and they would like press coverage, in fact. The numbers swell at the weekends. People do come down. They come down from Austin and Dallas and Houston and other places. But during the week, it's just a core of people who are dedicated to this.
Yeah. Well, never underestimate that a small group of dedicated people can change the world. Indeed, as Margaret Mead said, that's the way it's always happened. So,
yes.
I have to tip my hat to Cindy. I'm very proud of her that she's out there doing that. That's just tough work. And I'm proud of you, Victoria Jones, that you're out there in the heat as well. It's just great. Anything happening with Tom DeLay in Texas?
Well, the Tom DeLay story, I had expected it to be a huge story because it is a Texas story, and yes, it's getting some coverage, the fact that he may find some other way to get his name off the ballot, but it isn't as big as you'd expect it to be. I just get the impression that Texans are Tom DeLay'd out.
Yeah. Here's a guy who really is yesterday's news now.
Yes. That's
now when is Joe Lieberman going to become yesterday's news?
Well, I would think maybe by the end of August. I mean, when other campaigns really start revving up, people are, I think he already is, quite honestly. I'll tell you when. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. All the Democrats are now, I mean, Hillary Clinton came out and endorsed Ned Lamont. Evan Bayh, the DLC, is now endorsing Ned Lamont. I mean, that's the kiss of death for Joe Lieberman, isn't it?
It is, except, I don't know, he's got those independents, he's got moderate Republicans. I think Lieberman stands a chance.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that's the danger. That's the danger. Victoria Jones, our senior Crawford correspondent with the Talk Radio News service, talkradionews.com, the website. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I've always been crazy. It's kept me from going insane.
This is my song.
Nobody knows if it's something to bless or to blame. Till now, I ain't found a rhyme or a reason to change.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Glad to have you with us 34 minutes past the hour. 1,855. That's the number of bodies that showed up in the Baghdad morgue last month, July. 71% increase from January. 1,855 human beings. Dead bodies showed up at the Baghdad morgue. 60% of Americans oppose the war in Iraq, the highest number since polling began. 57% support a timetable for troop withdrawal. The Bush administration, this is from thinkprogress.org, the Bush administration has drafted amendments to a U.S. war crimes law passed in the mid-1990s that criminalized violations of the Geneva Conventions. The changes would mean interrogators would no longer face possible prosecution for committing, quote, outrages upon the personal dignity of prisoners, end quote. The plan has, quote, provoked concern at the International Committee of the Red Cross. By the way, Karl Rove, there was some speculation that Lieberman was doing a Rove yesterday during the elections. Karl Rove, you'll recall, when he was working for a Republican candidate in Texas, this was the candidate that he worked for before he worked for George W. Bush. And he was working for this guy on his campaign, and the guy was behind. The Democrat was out in front. And so just a couple of days before the election, Karl Rove discovers a bug behind a picture in the wall in his office and calls the FBI. Turns out that the bug had a battery in it that only lasted about 2 or 3 hours. Nobody had been in his office except Karl Rove in the last 2 or 3 hours. It's pretty well accepted by everybody now that Karl Rove himself planted the bug. But he blamed it on the Democrat, and it got such bad press for the Democrat that it actually helped his Republican candidate win. Well, yesterday, Joe Lieberman was claiming his website had been taken down and implicitly blaming it on Lamont. And people were going, Karl Rove, his fingerprints are all over the Joe Lieberman campaign. And a lot of us were going, come on, you know, I mean, it's probably just a coincidence. We shouldn't get paranoid. Karl Rove and Joe Lieberman? Come on, give me a break. And now comes this story. This is from the National Journal. Quoted over at Think Progress. ABC's George Stephanopoulos reports, quote, according to a close Lieberman advisor, the president's political guru, Karl Rove, has reached out to the Lieberman camp with a message straight from the Oval Office, quote, the boss wants to help, whatever we can do, we will, end quote. That from Karl Rove to Joe Lieberman. I'm telling you, it's getting weirder and weirder and weirder. I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. There's a little bit of health news that I think is worthy of sharing with you. fairly important, actually. This was published in the current journal of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, just out. And it's not getting a lot of play, frankly, and I think it should. I remember when I was a kid, when I was a young kid, when I was like 7 years old, six, seven, 8 years old, and I could walking home from school, and there was a shoe store along the way. This would have been like 1958. And I could walk into the shoe store. My friends and I used to do this all the time. You walk into the shoe store, and they had this X-ray machine where you put your feet in the bottom of it, and you stand up. It was sort of like those stand-up scales that you get weighed on, only you put your feet in the bottom, and there was a screen up at the top, and you could see the bones in your feet. And the whole point of it was you put on a pair of shoes, and then you stick your feet in the X-ray machine, and you can see where the shoe outline is and where your feet outline are, and you can tell if your shoes fit. It was the new hip thing, the in thing for shoe stores to have. And then they discovered, and I, God only knows how many times I stuck my feet in that thing. And then they discovered that X-rays cause cancer, and this is just not a good idea. And they pulled them. And you can find these machines in museums now, but that's about it. Well, a lot of women are getting ultrasounds, and it looks like the other shoe is about to drop now on this. This from the Canadian TV service, ctv.ca. Scientists are investigating whether ultrasound scans during pregnancy can harm the brains of unborn babies. The move follows a U.S. study which showed the developing offspring of pregnant mice suffered brain abnormalities when they were exposed to ultrasound waves. This was research done at Yale University. The waves, the waves which are at a high enough frequency to penetrate flesh also induce vibrations in tissue which can lead to a rise in temperature, suggesting they could cause damage. The team now plans further research on monkeys to see if similar effects occur in larger, more human-like brains. Talking about this paper that was done by Dr. Pasco Rakic, published in the, as I said, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The paper said that while the effects of ultrasound on human brain development are not yet known, there are disorders thought to be the result of misplacement of brain cells during development. These, and now quoting from the research, quoting from the study, these disorders range from mental retardation in childhood epilepsy to developmental dyslexia, autism spectrum disorders, and schizophrenia. Now we're seeing one in 166 children being born right now with somewhere on the autistic spectrum, whether from Asperger's to full-blown autism. Now, Asperger's has been around forever. I mean, there's a brilliant book by Norm Legend called Diagnosing Jefferson that makes the strong case, I consider a compelling case. I read it, and I think he's right, that Thomas Jefferson had Asperger's, that he was what are affectionately referred in the community as an Aspie. And they didn't have ultrasound machines back when Jefferson's mother was pregnant. But, you know, there's been this explosion in autism and Asperger's and other things associated with it, and other what are sometimes referred to as brain disorders, or at least brain differences. Attention deficit disorder, of course, exploding. And people, you know, some folks have been pointing at mercury and in vaccines and things like that. Maybe this stuff tracks the explosion of the use of ultrasound to determine the gender of a baby and to make sure that, you know, pregnancies are going along okay. The findings, the magazine by the Canadian newspaper, by the way, notes ironically, I'm sure they didn't intend it to be ironically, but they note the findings come just a few months after Tom Cruise bought girlfriend Katie Holmes her own sonogram machine for her to use at home while she was expecting the couple's first child, their daughter Suri. So, technology marches on. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, before I comment on the Bush League Democrat, Joe Lieberman, I have to respond to what was said about Chris Matthews talking about the Phil Donahue situation.
Yeah.
Chris Matthews is a filthy liar. As a matter of fact, Chris Matthews did an interview in Playboy magazine just a few months before Phil Donahue got fired, and Chris Matthews was basically implying that Phil Donahue was un-American and that he had some un-American guests on, and that he was giving MSNBC a bad image.
Yeah,
so,
and the memo is out. I mean, that they brought this guy in, and he said, you know, and the flag waving is going to be going on. We need to get this guy off the air because he's talking anti-war. And the Donahue show is the most profitable show. Hey, he had more viewers than Chris Matthews did, and he was toast because
that's
of
right.
politics.
Pure, that's right.
Pure and simple. We just have a minute before we have to take a break here, Joe. You wanted to call about actually Karl Rove and Joe Lieberman.
Well, yeah. In fact, I mentioned the Karl Rove thing to your screener just before you mentioned it on the air, and yeah, I got to thinking about it because I mean, what, you come out with that accusation a day before the primary, your opponent doesn't have any time to respond to it. Okay, so he only winds up losing the primary by 4%, so now he can come out and say, well, I lost the primary because dirty tricks were performed against me, my website got knocked off the air, blah, blah, blah.
That's a classic Karl Rove tactic.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Do you think, Joe, that Rove and Lieberman actually got into this before the fact? Oh, Joe has dropped off the line. This is the question. Karl Rove, according to George Stephanopoulos, has today reached out and said to the Lieberman camp, the boss, that's George W. Bush, wants to help. Whatever we can do, we will. I'm wondering if that offer was made before today. And to what extent the White House and Karl Rove and the White House political machine has been involved in the Lieberman campaign up to this point. And to what extent they will be involved. I mean, is Lieberman going to be the de facto Republican candidate now? And if so, is he going to decide not to caucus with the Democrats if he wins in the fall? 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Now it's almost 3 years down the road, and our boys and girls still carry the load. Dying in a country that really doesn't want us there. My job's gone and yours is too. And Bush won't tell us what he's gonna do. George W., boy, why don't you go on out to that gas pump and jack it up another quarter? Your daddy's bubbas, they appreciate it. Y'all here? Now we're doing the Bush and Cheney shuffle. A twist on this and a spin on that. I don't believe a single word they say. They just sit around and make up lies all day.
Yes, welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, coming up on 9. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, smalldog.com, the website. You can get the latest iPods and all things Macintosh there. The Tom Hartman Program, where being progressive never felt so good. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, and Harriet in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Harriet, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about the latest in the Karl Rove playbook,
mm-hmm.
the Judas Kiss.
Yeah.
That the president gave to Joe Lieberman.
Right.
They've been listening to this man and his support of the president. So this kiss makes Senator Lieberman suspect and jeopardizes his reelection. Now he has lost. So the new man is eligible now come November for the treatment.
The treatment being?
The treatment. Oh, the smearing, the usual.
Oh, the swift voting.
The
yeah.
treatment, yes.
Yeah.
So I hope his staff is on top of this right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, well said, Harriet. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Jeff in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. I also listen to Sean Hannity sometimes. I like to hear how the other side thinks.
You have my sympathy, Jeff.
I know. I don't listen to it for pleasure. It's just to espionage purposes.
Well,
on Monday, Sean was worrying. He's telling his listeners to be sure to vote on November 7th because I think we're in deep trouble. But then he went on, despite the fact that Paul Weyrich whatever the gentleman's name is. He assured Sean just the other day, don't worry, Sean, everything is in order. Things will be okay on the night of November 7th, even though things don't look real good right now. And I just kept thinking of that clip that you play about the goo-goo government syndrome.
Yeah, in fact, here it is. Paul Weyrich, the head Republican strategist, the guy who claimed credit for putting Ronald Reagan into the White House and helped organize the Christian Coalition and the whole bit. Here he is.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome? Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Which is why Catherine Harris knocked 90,000 people off the voting rolls. It's why Ken Blackwell knocked 300,000 people off the voting rolls or prevented them from voting by his allocation of machines. It's why the same. It's why the governor of Alabama, just the Republican governor of Alabama, Bob Riley, just took physical possession of the voting rolls from the Democratic Secretary of State and down in Alabama so that he could purge those rolls. I mean, it's why Jeb Bush is operating under a court order forbidding him to keep doing this, and yet he has continued to do it for the last two elections in violation of that court order. Yeah, that's the Republican strategy there, Jeff, because they can't win on the issues.
Yeah, they can't win a straight-up election. They've got to cheat now.
Yeah, well, and not just now. It's been going on for a while.
Perhaps
it's been going on for a while.
81.
Well, it could be. I mean, it was 2000 was the first year in the history of the United States where the exit polls started seriously and significantly deviating from the actual results of the elections.
Where does this Mr. Weyrich work out of? What state and what city?
I believe he's based in Virginia. Frankly, though, I don't where he is these days, I don't know.
I think he's a very dangerous man.
For
him to be assuring Sean Hannity not to be worrying about November 7th, and everybody knows how things look.
Yeah.
There's something afoot.
Oh, I guarantee you there's something afoot. And whether the something, and I mean, you can just feel it, you know, and whether the something that's afoot is going to be another anthrax attack, like the one that happened just, you know, the only two members of Congress who got the anthrax were the two who were in a position to stop the Patriot Act. They got the Patriot Act. Tom Daschle, who was the head of the Senate, would have brought it to the floor for a vote. And Pat Leahy, the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, the only two people who could have stopped the Patriot Act in the Senate, and they were both inclined to, were the only two people who got the anthrax just before the Patriot Act, and thus they had to leave their offices, all their paperwork, everything behind, and it scared the bejesus out of them on top of that, so the Patriot Act gets passed. I mean, whether it's another anthrax attack or another 9/11 kind of attack, or whether it's going to be just another good old-fashioned Ken Blackwell, only they're going to get more systematic about it in more states. I mean, we've got reports now coming in from all over the country of people saying you want to sign a medical marijuana petition and discovering that they're being re-registered as Republicans.
I bet it'll have something to do with the referendum on partial birth abortion or homosexuality, that type of thing on election day.
Well, that's what they get those things on the ballot to get the base out, so that the base will then say, well, while I'm here, I might as well vote for the Republican.
Yeah, vote a straight ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
and
thanks,
absolutely.
Thanks for the time, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Good to hear from you.
We must all be alert. Because there's definitely something afoot.
Yeah, not just alert. We need to get active. We need
to
need to get out there. Show up at your local Democratic Party and say, I would like to participate on election day in being an observer. We should be calling the United Nations. You know, somebody needs to call the Carter Center. Hey, the Carter Center should be observing these things. I mean, the level of fraud. Of course, you look at what happened in Ohio. The international observers from Europe were not allowed to observe what happened in Ohio. And they went back and they said, we can't certify this election. The people who certified the election in the Ukraine, the second election, that we turned to, said that they couldn't certify the election in Ohio. And now, you know, you read Bobby Kennedy's piece and you figure out why. Amazing. Amazing. Well, we do have to do something about it. And if they're going to, as Mark Crispin Miller says, you know, they stole 2 million votes in 2000. They stole 3 million in 2002. They stole 5 million in 2004. They're fixing to steal 6 million. We just have to beat them by 7 or 8 or 9 million. So get out there and get active. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. our rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. How about an activism alert here? What to do if you're not sure what to do today? This I think is pretty critical. Pretty critical.
May take all we need to down it. May take long ago. They got the guns, but we got the numbers. Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over. Come on!
Yeah, we've got to exercise our numbers. Call your senators. We each have two, unless you live in the District of Columbia. We each have two senators. The toll-free number, 1-888-355-3588. You'll find that toll-free number also on my homepage at tomhartman.com. And call your senator and both of your senators and just say, hi, I'm just, you know, so-and-so, and here's my name and address and zip code. And I give them the information so they'll know that you're actually a constituent. They take those kind of calls far more seriously and say, please, please work and vote for net neutrality, in favor of net neutrality. The Internet must stay accessible to all Americans, regardless of rich or poor, regardless of their political persuasion or affiliation. I find it very interesting that in a time when conservative websites are starting to decline significantly, progressive websites are growing fast, and the net has become one of the major organizing tools for progressive candidacies, and Ned Lamont, case in point, you know, and Howard Dean, what he did, that now net neutrality is under attack. I find that probably more than coincidental and very concerning. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, and Carolyn in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I wondered if I could backtrack for just a second.
Sure.
A couple of things. You mentioned you were talking about Cindy and Code Pink and Crawford. You might be interested to know, here in Phoenix, one of our Code Pink women, Liz, has been going from Kyle's office to Shadig's office, different lawmakers who are supporting this failed occupation in Iraq. And we put up the Code Pink tent, and she's been fasting, modified fast for sure, but she stays out there all day long, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and we've been calling the office of whichever legislator it is that
is
week.
She stays in front of the local office of the legislators?
Yeah.
That's great. God bless her. That's great.
It's brutally hot here.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, anyone who wants to can run by 22nd and Camelback and join her or take her water or say hi, Liz. And she's just fantastic, because she'll talk to people that come by. Sometimes veterans come by and they're annoyed, and after she explains, they understand better.
So yeah, this is called supporting the vets, by the way. You know, this is supporting our troops. I mean, it really and truly is.
Yeah, it informs people. It's, you know, it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to comment on that was really kind of funny is you're talking about the kiss. What the kiss is to Lieberman. I think these red hands are going to be for J.D. Hayworth. Because we've caught him red-handed, taking $169,000, $169,940, that is, from Big Oil. But then he's turned around with his votes and handed out billions in favors to Big Oil companies.
Now, J.D. Hayworth is your congressman?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
From Congressional District 5, and he's one of the worst.
Tempe.
He's just horrendous.
Huh.
You know, it's just...
And let me guess, he's a Republican?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm shocked. There's gambling in Casablanca. I'm shocked.
He's not just Republican. He's got to be one of these whacked out Christian extreme right, you know...
The Taliban.
Dominionist or something.
Yeah.
Because I was in his office and talking to his aide, and I mean, they were trying to tell me why we should be fighting in Iraq. You know, it made no sense. So I think they're looking for Armageddon or something. So he's whacked out. But anyway, get back to J.D. So the oil companies are getting these record profits, and we're getting record high gas prices.
Yep.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yep.
And you know what we did? We went out to a big $1,000 a plate fundraiser that he had up in Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to be a gated community.
Mm-hmm.
It was a blooming gated house.
Wow.
With a security guard.
Yeah.
And they called out three squad cars, police cars.
Because you were,
because
you were going to protest.
Huh?
Because you were going to protest?
Well, yeah, they just, the security guard, just upon seeing us, there were only 13 of us, and we had these big red foam hands that said caught red-handed on
it. That's great.
And it gets better because so they called the Scottsdale police out, and the squad cars pulled up and faced us on the other side of the street.
Right.
So they were on the driveway side. We were on
and
the north.
And this is at the fancy schmancy mansion for a fundraiser for J.D. Hayworth.
Yeah.
Right.
What was hysterical about it was that this in the house letters for this place. There was this edifice by this big wide gate that, and it rose up into the sky. And the house letters were taller than I am.
Wow.
So you had the house letters up in the sky. But here comes this black, slinky limo with the dark windows and everything, and
right.
It misses the house. Here we are standing there with our red hands on one side of the street, cop cars on the other side of the street, and it just drives on by and disappears into the wrong gate.
Uh-huh.
So here it comes back a while back, and we were there laughing, saying, you know, these fat cats can't find their venue.
Well, his tinted windows were just too well tinted. He couldn't see very well.
Well, so we used our red hands to show the fat cats where to
go to give them. That's amazing.
Not only that, we did a video. One of our guys did video of it,
mm-hmm.
and he split it, put it together with music. And like a silent movie with text, it's hysterical.
That's great.
If people
That's
want,
great.
It was really
is
funny.
Is there a website for it, Carolyn?
Pardon me?
Is it on the web?
Oh, yeah. There's a matter of fact, there's a write-up on the story in BuzzFlash's mailbag from August 7th.
Great.
And if you go to the sixth article down, it's titled Newsflash, Old J.D. Caught Red-Handed in the Big Oil Jar.
That's great.
And there's a link to the YouTube video. It's
Carolyn,
really
Carolyn, thanks for the heads up. I have to move along, but thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Great to hear from you. Bobby in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Bobby, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for being on the air. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Without you listening,
hey,
I got nothing.
It's a pleasure. And thanks to your wife, too. She does I'm sure she does a lot to get you where you are on the air, too.
She does. Louise is marvelous. And there's a lot of people involved with this program who would do really well. Louise is, in my mind, at the top of the pile and whatever. And David Poole here.
Chat.
And the folks in New York. Tim, Lauren, Alex, Clay, the whole bunch of them. Yep.
So, you've been talking about Cindy Sheehan, and these talkers, these right-wing talkers here in Puget Sound, you know, they're throwing mud at her, really. I mean, they're...
Oh, of course.
They're so... they're offensive, they're rude, they're deriding her for her fast because she's drinking water and taking protein tablets, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's a person speaking out, speaking her mind. She lost her son, and, you know, in a violent, pointless manner. And she's simply speaking her mind and drawing attention to something. And I really have nothing nice to say about these people here who get on the air and ridicule someone.
I think increasingly, Bobby, people are getting it, that it's hate talk. I mean, you know, we used to use the phrase, you know, years ago when I started this program, we'd sometimes refer to right-wing talk radio as hate radio.
Yeah.
But you know, it really, frankly, wasn't so much hate radio so often back then. I mean, you had guys like Michael Savage, you know, who kind of made a career out of being hate radio.
But the strain in America,
it's really happening now.
This fear that Americans have that they cover up and then somebody comes along and, you know, cultivates this fear and anger and ignorance,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, that's something to be truly ashamed of if that's what you've spent your life doing, you know. And as a conscientist or someone like you on the air, you know, you talk to people if they want to have a discussion with you in an intelligent, dignified manner, you'll talk to them whether or not they agree. And, you know, that is such a rarity. For every 1 hour of Air America, there's like 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of this hate speech, and it's just maddening.
Well, I think Americans are waking up to it.
And I hope so.
I mean, the fact that we just added 3 new affiliates this week, I mean, and it's not just this program. I mean, just in general, people are waking up to the fact that so much right-wing radio is really tragically hate radio. And you know, it only worked for a little while for Father Coughlin. It's only going to work for a little while for them.
Thank goodness there's you and others. And
Bobby, thank you. Thank you for your kind words. I got a boogie, but thank you so much. It's 16 minutes past the hour, and support our sponsors if you want to support us.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
The ghost of Columbus haunts this world. God's still conquering America. Inherit the earth, 'cause you're still conquering America.
And welcome back, my friends. The place where reason is our lifestyle choice. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. Agent Orange, outside of Vietnam, Larry Scott is with us. He's the editor-in-chief, chief cook and bottle washer, head guy over there at vawatchdog.org. Founder and editor is your title, I guess, right, Larry?
And everything. The chief cook and bottle washer I like, too.
Yeah, okay, great.
That's a good one. Yes, Agent Orange outside Vietnam. For a long time, Tom, we've known that Agent Orange has been used in many countries, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos. It was also used in Korea back in the late 60s, and many Korean vets have fought for years to get benefits because of this exposure. They decided to defoliate a small patch of the DMZ, mm-hmm. 150 yards wide and 351 miles long, if you can imagine that. But we have documents now, and these are actually documents from the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, and there's a rather complete listing of all the places. And it's Florida, Georgia, Arkansas, Hawaii, Texas, Indiana, Utah, the list goes on and on, New York, California, Washington State, where Agent Orange and other defoliants have been not only used on a regular basis, but tested over the years. And I would encourage...
Now, let's just, for those people who don't know, Agent Orange is one of the older names for an herbicide, mm-hmm. sort of in the Roundup family, I suppose you would say, except that in the manufacturing process of it, it became contaminated or I guess intrinsic to the manufacturing process of it, it becomes contaminated with dioxin.
Dioxins, right.
And dioxin is one of the most carcinogenic substances, chemical substances, known to the human organism. And so, not just carcinogenic. There's a whole variety of other problems that come with exposure to dioxins. And so when you've been exposed to Agent Orange, odds are you've been exposed to dioxins, and there's this whole panoply of horrors that go with that.
Well, the most obvious and the one that is really giving the VA the biggest problem right now, Tom, is late onset type 2 diabetes.
Oh, interesting.
It is.
It attacks the pancreas?
Beg your pardon?
It attacks the pancreas attacks the metabolism? Or?
Yes, and what happens is what they have found is there is such a direct link between this that if you were exposed to Agent Orange any place when inside your service, the VA has what they call a presumptive. That means if you come down with late-onset type 2 diabetes, it is presumed to have been caused by the Agent Orange. Any veteran who was feet on the ground in Vietnam or boots on the ground, if you have type 2 diabetes, go to the VA. They cover everything for you. There are also about a dozen different types of very bizarre cancers. The list is very long. I don't want to read it, but this is also available on VAWatchdog.org. You can look it up under Agent Orange. It will list the various types of cancers. If your child was born with spina bifida, that also is what they call a presumptive. It's presumed that it was caused by your exposure as a GI to Agent Orange, and the VA covers all of the medical care, and there are also certain benefits and also compensation that go along with that as well. But this list, it's a 10-page list, and I would encourage veterans to come to the site and take a look at it because it some places you would just never think. Camp Detrick in Maryland, Kingston, Rhode Island. What were they doing in Kingston, Rhode Island? But it lists the dates, And this goes back as far as the late 40s and the early 50s and some of the early experimentations with various forms of herbicides that they have now found to be cancer-producing.
Now, do you have to be a veteran to be able to claim that you were exposed by the military to this and therefore entitled to compensation?
You have to be a veteran to claim compensation or medical benefits through the VA, yes. The ramifications to civilians, I don't know on that other than a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think if they're using it at Camp Dietrich that it's, I mean, the stuff isn't, it will migrate. You know, it'll get into the groundwater. It gets sprayed on this tree. It gets over on that tree. You know, whatever. I mean, this could be just like the tip of the iceberg kind of thing.
It is the tip of the iceberg. The Agent Orange story is really going to unfold in the next couple of decades, Tom. We're just really seeing the beginning of it.
Yeah, just like depleted uranium. Larry, we just have a minute left. I heard a news story the other day about these two teenagers who were busted for stealing this laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard from you that it was actually a hard drive that had all the veterans' data. Have there been two thefts? Is this an attempt by the government to minimize what's going on? What's the deal here?
No, actually, the teenagers are... they stand accused right now of stealing not only the laptop itself, but the external hard drive. And the FBI report shows that they had stolen both of those items, and those items were not only stolen together, they were then resold together and then turned back to the police together. So although we have two separate physical units, you tie them together into one bundle that was stolen and then sold and then turned back in.
Do you think this is good news?
What, that they have found the people who did it?
It doesn't
change the problem, and that was the laptop was stolen and the data could have been compromised, and as you may have noticed on the website, we have a...
There's another one. VA subcontractor loses personal data of 38,000 veterans.
There you go.
Yeah, we're out of time, but people can check it out over at vawatchdog.org. Larry Scott. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Tom, great as always. Thank you so much.
Great speaking with you. 27 minutes past the hour, the place where being progressive never felt so good. The Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's not that we don't care. We just know that the body's there. We keep on waiting on the world to check.
And welcome back, my friends. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where tuning in is as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. Welcome back to the program, 34 minutes past the hour. Maybe those Jeff Gannon jokes are starting to get a little old. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. Our phone number, 1-866-440-8466. Toll free across the United States. If you want to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com will get you there. Just click live chat and you can drop in and say hi. And of course, there's also the message board. Ed in Montclair, New Jersey on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's kind of... when you had your guest on from the, what was it, VA Watch?
VAWatchdog.org.
Right,
Scott.
My uncle actually served on the Agent Orange detail in Vietnam.
You mean he was one of the guys tossing it out of airplanes?
No, ground crew, where they'd go through with the sprayers attached to, like, I don't know, I guess it was plows and stuff.
Wow.
And he wound up developing type 2 diabetes just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he knows about that program. So
send him over to Larry's website, vawatchdog.org.
The other thing is his daughter was born. She was born maybe a couple of years after he got back from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born without an eye on, like, her left eye.
Oh, my.
No socket or anything. And to this day, the Veterans Administration, ever since day one, they've always fought him about saying, you know, maybe this Agent Orange had something to do with it. They never acknowledged anything when it came to that.
Yeah. And you know, the other side of the story, we talk, for example, you know, we talk about the 2,000, you know, what, 600 and some odd now American soldiers who've died in Iraq. We talk about the 56,000, as I recall, American soldiers who died in Vietnam. Do you know how many Vietnamese died in Vietnam during the conflict with us?
God.
Take a guess.
A million? Maybe.
Yeah, a million. You're doing pretty good. It's over 2 million. Most people, when you ask them that question, will say around 300,000. You know, you say there's 56,000 Americans died. How many Vietnamese do you figure died? And they'd say, you know, 2 million. And the Agent Orange, I mean, they were using it as a defoliant to wipe out the jungle so people couldn't hide, and in what they call and considered rebel areas to kill off the food plants so people would die of starvation or, you know, come out and surrender to try and get food. And so the Agent Orange was being dumped on the indigenous Vietnamese population, and they're still suffering terribly from it as well.
So. Right, right. It's a dirty little secret from Dow.
yeah, it is. Ed, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good
Bye.
To hear from you. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Jackie, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to pass on some good news that our local unit of the League of Women Voters, which is a nonpartisan political organization, we are going to monitor our local elections.
And mm-hmm. in Great. Our How?
Upcoming meeting, we're going to have our county auditor come and speak about what's being done in our area to safeguard the voting machines and prevent barriers to voter registration and make sure there's no... she's going to guarantee us there will be no mishandling of provisional or absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to do everything possible to make sure that the voters know that our elections are going to be fair and valid. And I want to say that the League of Women Voters is a great organization, and they have great principles and a great mission.
I agree. I agree. And they deserve all of our support. And Jackie, thanks for participating with them.
Yeah.
Good on you.
And I challenge everybody to do that, because our auditor actually has a program where they train monitors for the political parties and
mm-hmm.
Just citizens. And so I encourage people to contact their auditors and monitor.
Yeah, well said. Jackie, thank you very much.
Okay,
And congratulations. Well done. Blue in Missouri in the chat room says, Tom, not all the Vietnamese people were killed just by American soldiers. Vietnam, Viet Cong killed them too. Yes, there was an element of civil war going on there as well. And I don't mean that as just, you know, America, you know, bad, Vietnam good or something like that. It's just like with everything else. None of these things break down to be black and white. I mean, it's just the tragic reality of it. General George Casey now coming out and talking about civil war, about the possibility or tragic reality of civil war in Iraq. This was in an interview with ABC News. Here's General Casey.
The last week or so has been the highest levels of sectarian violence that I've seen since I've been here. A countrywide, the threat of a countrywide civil war, I think I would say that probably is the most significant threat right now.
So the threat of a countrywide civil war, the most significant threat right now. And at the same time, Bush is saying, well, you know, we'll let the next president deal with this. We're going to let... No, I'm not kidding you. We're going to let the next president deal with this. Author Tom Ricks, the reporter and author of the book Fiasco, about the... In fact, I interviewed him. I don't recall if it was on this program or if it was on my local program, but I interviewed him when that book came out just in the last month or so. It might have been on the local program on AM 620 KPOJ. Reporter Tom Ricks said, and I quote, I asked one officer, why are you talking to me about these things? This is about, you know, the essential disaster of the occupation, the Bush-led or the Republican-led occupation of Iraq. He said, you know, why are you talking to me about these things? And he looked down at his hands, and I'm quoting Tom Ricks here, and he looked down at his hands and he said, because I have the blood of American troops on my hands. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, because when I said to Rumsfeld, we need that division, and Rumsfeld said, no, I gave up, I compromised. And he said, U.S. troops died because of that, and he said, that's why I'm talking to you. And he was practically crying as he spoke to me about this. This over at thinkprogress.org. Meanwhile, Bill O'Reilly had it visiting an alternative universe. I mean, it's just I have no other way to explain it. That this guy must live in an alternative universe. I mean, he's talking to Michelle Malkin, whose book has an entire chapter called "Liberal Bigots," and who talks about who has made a living out of calling progressive, calling Americans names, Americans who are not members of her right wing cult names. And here's O'Reilly saying, "Oh, but the right doesn't call people names, do they?" And Michelle Malkin says, "Yeah, we do. I do myself." And he goes, "Well, as far as I can tell, nobody on the right is calling anybody names." Just get this. I mean, this is a true alternative reality moment, courtesy of Bill O'Reilly.
Had Leonard Pitts in some, he's a columnist from Miami Herald, in some of the pieces. Now, Pitts's column today didn't call anybody a racist. He kind of, he was writing about Mel Gibson. He'd walk in that line.
Now, by the way, whenever O'Reilly mentions Mel Gibson, he really should say my business partner Mel Gibson, because O'Reilly was one of the investors in The Passion of the Christ and flogged that movie relentlessly on Fox to make himself millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions, who knows? I mean, the movie made $600 million. How much of it went to Bill O'Reilly, nobody knows, but a good chunk of it.
Walking that line. Now, Michelle, have you ever done that in your columns? Because we have researched right-wing columnists, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but have you ever called anybody a racist, a homophobe, or anybody, anything like that?
Well, I call people what they are in my columns, and occasionally that does mean taking liberal bigots to task for their hypocrisy. And I was on your show back in the fall when I was on my book tour talking about Unhinged, which has a whole chapter on unhinged liberal bigots.
Now, here's Michelle Malkin. Yeah, I call liberals bigots all the time. Sure, yep, that's what I do. Yep, yes, indeed. Uh-huh.
Who, on the one hand, talk about compassion and tolerance, and on the other hand, use the most vile epithets against their opponents. And I think that there is a place for labeling it when it is.
Rather than bigots.
Now, here's O'Reilly. He's trying to get her to say, no, actually, I don't call names. I identify people, because they're not really bigots. They're just hypocrites.
See, look, here's what I'm objecting to. We had John Podhoretz, who's a columnist, and he's a conservative guy. He says that Al Gore is insane. Okay. I mean, that's just the usual partisan rhetoric. Ann Coulter calls people witches, harpies, you know, all kinds of retarded. All right. Name calling is one thing, but labeling a person a bigot, all right, it's worth saying they're anti-Semitic or homophobic, or that elevates it up into, here's a hater, that person's a hater.
Right.
Now, these columnists don't know these people. They don't know me. They don't know Mel Gibson.
See, this is really all about Mel Gibson.
Grossly irresponsible.
Well, yes, especially when, and of course, when it's all they have. And I've been on the receiving end on that ever since I began my career as a public commentator. When all they have to say...
Now, she goes around going, oh, yeah, well, no, those liberals, they call me names. But it's really all about Mel Gibson being called an anti-Semite. That's what it all boils down to. But here's where the crack in reality comes in.
Immigrant basher, you hate Hispanics. If you talk about the war on terror, if you talk about jihadist infiltration, you're an Islamophobe, and it goes on and on. And this is a crude tool in the intellectual tool shed of the American left. It's all they have. It's old, it's rusty, and it's ineffective.
Okay. I don't know whether the right does it. We really tried to research this fair and balanced. We didn't come up with anybody on the right who does this.
Well, that pretty much answers the question.
Couldn't come up with anybody on the right. We don't know if the right does it. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous. Stand upright and be strong, and may you stay
Always holding the ideals of this country. May we always hold the ideals of this country. Yeah, we haven't always acted them out perfectly. In fact, we've really screwed them up in a lot of ways, particularly in our early years. But we had the ideals. We had the idea, the ideals, the notions, the fundamental concepts. And it's our obligation, both as the inheritors of this nation and as those who are holding it in trust for future generations, to live up to those ideals. And Joan Baez does just a great job of articulating it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Michael in Palmer, Alaska, listening on KUDO in Anchorage. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking the call. I wanted to add some comments on the Agent Orange issue.
Yeah.
Larry just does a wonderful job for veterans. I'm a Vietnam vet, also disabled from the effects of Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working for a long time in Vietnam with the with other veterans who have been trying to help the Vietnamese recover from the legacy of war and legacy of Agent Orange. We operate a rehab center for veterans and their children who have suffered presumptively from Agent Orange. And
for Vietnamese veterans?
That's for American veterans working with Vietnamese veterans.
I see.
To do this at a place called Friendship Village.
Uh-huh, in Vietnam.
And they're, yes, in Vietnam, outside of Hanoi, and they continue to ask the United States for support for help for working with the victims in Vietnam.
Right.
They presume about a million children, a million victims still who need treatment. We, in the VA, as Larry was saying, we have presumptive diseases, about 14 of them, from the effects of Agent Orange, and yet we don't provide any, not one dime, of service to Vietnam for all of the damages done there. Also, I wanted to mention that it's not only 2 million, but when you consider Southeast Asia, 3 million people died as a result of us destabilizing that Southeast Asian region.
Well, yeah, actually, there was about 2 million who died in Cambodia under Pol Pot. So if there were 2 million Vietnamese who died, that would be 4 million, wouldn't it?
Approximately that. I've heard that figure. But yeah, at the minimum. You see, also people don't realize that the Vietnamese defeated Pol Pot,
mm-hmm,
and they went on to fight 10 years more,
yeah,
until 1985 and 1986, until they withdrew once they got rid of Pol Pot.
Yeah.
And it's a tragic story that we have yet to know about. As a nation, we don't have any cultural memory. Our historical facts seem to just disappear somehow about this.
Yeah. It's really a remarkable one. Pol Pot's physician, Red Cross physician, was a guy by the name of Will Crinan, who I know, and who I wrote about, actually, in one of my books.
Yeah.
And Will and I spent some time in Malaysia together.
Uh-huh.
And he had some fascinating stories. I mean, you know, the Red Cross just assigned doctors to you know, pretty much everybody, all sides. That's, you know, they weren't taking sides. But what I didn't know until Will told me this story was that Pol Pot was trying to do what he perceived the Catholics as having successfully done, and what the Robespierre, Maximilian Robespierre, unsuccessfully did with the French Revolution, which was to try to literally create a brand new civilization from zero. He declared year zero. All calendars started with year zero, or year one, the first year of the rule of Pol Pot. And anybody who was literate was put to death, which is why, you know, over a million people were killed, and why he first went out and killed people with glasses, because that was proof that they knew how to read. And the idea was to start an entire generation, to kill all the old people, to kill all the everybody who had any cultural wisdom or knowledge, or you know, basically of any history. He was trying to just create what Daniel Quinn would call a great forgetting, you know, just a complete forgetting,
right,
and build this new utopian society that was basically, you know, a cult of personality around him. And very, very bizarre. And yet, when you consider how how very nearly successful he was, at least at the beginning of it, you know, and how many millions of people died as a consequence of it. And like you say, it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't been in that part of the world destabilizing it, much like we're destabilizing the Middle East now. The unintended consequences are horrific.
Oh, once you release the dogs of war, you can't put them back. And that's what people, you know, all of the issues about atrocities and so forth. War itself is an atrocity in the 21st century.
Yes.
And we need to find new solutions. And I it's so sickening to see the exact same patterns of behavior that went into the escalation of Vietnam continue to this day.
Yeah.
And it's a tragedy. I really appreciate your show, Tom. I use it for citations, for teaching, and things like this. And I think you're doing a great service for this country.
Well, thank you, Michael. And thanks for listening to us there on KUDO.
One last reference to you, if you'd like.
It's got to be fast.
Pol Pot by Philip Short.
Okay.
Anatomy of a Nightmare. It's a mind blower, and it's a tremendously historical correct.
Great. I'll have to check it out. Because, like I said, you know, all of my information is just weird stories I heard from Will. So, coming up on tomorrow's program, will nuclear power end civilization? Helen Caldicott will be here in the studio, dropping by to answer that question. I'll be challenging conservative David Tebow on the free speech of teachers' unions. And Rick Seifert will be dropping by our Taking Back America segment. That and more in your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. We're here in the Democracy Zone. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag your end.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.